Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the regional and national issues from a Central Coast perspective. This program addresses the need for and consequences of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. Chris Kington Barker is your host today, and she's joined by guests from Joshua's House and Yolo Cares Hospice to address the tragic history of vulnerable unhoused people dying on the streets of Sacramento. Joshua's House will be opening its doors in July 2025 by providing hospice and supportive comfort care for and restoring the dignity of terminally ill homeless men and women. The facility will be the first residential hospice on the West Coast for terminally ill people who are homeless. We're encouraging you to join the conversation today. We are live in the studio, and you can call in your questions or comments during the show today at 805-781-3875. And with that, let's join Chris Kington Barker and her guests. Over to you, Chris.
Thanks, Brad. Since 2020, the Sacramento County Coroner has reported 1,230 people have died while homeless. According to Yolo Cares Hospice, a homeless person dies on the street every other day in Sacramento County, and estimates that 20% are from a terminal illness. We'll talk a little bit more during today's show about how those numbers really are probably artificially low. My guests today are here to talk about a project that has been years in the making to address a growing epidemic, not only in California, but nationwide, and how one community hopes to start making a difference. My guests are joining me by phone from Sacramento. They are Dee Rossi. Say your last name, Dee, for me.
Yeah, Rossilau.
Rossilau, a program manager at Joshua's House, a Yolo Cares program. And Deborah Chapman, Joshua House volunteer doula coordinator and grief specialist support groups coordinator for Yolo Cares. Welcome, both of you, to today's show.
Hello, Chris.
Hello. Hi, Chris. It's nice to have you join me, even though I can't see you. I can hear you, and it's nice to have you and your information. I know coming up is a really exciting time, and thank you. I know it's real busy. Thank you for being with us today. Let's start by talking a little bit about the history of Joshua's House. This has been since, I think this has started as a concept in 2015. Deborah, will you talk a little bit about the history and how this even came to be?
Yes, thank you for that question. I want to honor the founder of Joshua's House, Marlene, and help me with her last name, Chris.
Fredericks Fitzwater.
Thank you, Marlene Fredericks Fitzwater. Marlene is a healthcare professional from Sacramento who she herself lost her grandson who died on the streets of Nebraska in 2017 at the age of 35. Her grandson, Joshua, was in and out of rehabs and experiencing homelessness. It's a common scenario for many people who perceive what our homeless populations are in our communities, that they struggle with substance use, mental health disorders, and they're on the streets. Now, what we know on this side of the house is that's not true of everyone, but this was Marlene's experience losing her grandson. And she was deeply motivated that no one dies on the streets. And hence, Joshua's House inception was born.
And Marlene was a professor at UC Davis and spent a lot of years teaching in the medical school about different healthcare issues, including trying to do education around homelessness and around things like cancer and interactions with patients. And one of the things that she became fondly aware of, or unfondly aware of, I'll say, was interactions with her grandson during points of time where he was more stable. His experience on the street and was shared with her about the misunderstanding of who was homeless, how they became homeless, what kind of resources were available for them, and his observations about people who were dying on the streets, who had terminal illness, who could not access any kind of care. So this became a passion of hers, I understand.
Absolutely. so much so that she spent the last 10 years and a lot of hard work and energy to finally get to where we were yesterday at the ribbon cutting here in Sacramento.
Wow. And so with this whole concept, you know, of having someone who is unhoused and currently without something like Joshua's house, do you talk about what kinds of options are available in Sacramento for someone who has a terminal illness? And where do they go now? Do they go to a shelter?
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for that question. Just the way that hospice in general is set up, in order for anyone with a terminal illness to receive hospice care, one of those bullet points is that they have to be able to have housing or placement, as we usually call it on this side of the house. And so that leaves, for those who are terminally ill and unhoused, that problem of where do they go? I know that our team here at Yolo Cares, we often work with individuals who are unhoused and finding them placements, whether that's a skilled nursing facility, trying to get funding to get them into a motel or a hotel. But we can't do it all. So Joshua's house, I believe, is a start to an answer to that question, is providing a place where terminally unhoused patients can receive hospice care.
This is also a collaboration in Sacramento, not just with Yolo Cares, but this is a collaboration with four different large medical systems. Can you talk about the four systems and how you're working together?
Yeah, we saw it at the ribbon cutting yesterday. I think it was a beautiful picture of what can happen when we all come to the table to address an issue. So we are working with the major hospital systems in the area, Kaiser, Sutter, Mercy, I believe UC Davis as well. We know that they are our referring partners as well. That's where our patients will be coming from, as their systems, and when they come through their doors, and just knowing that Joshua's house will be here as a place that they can refer. Joshua's house didn't come to be without all of the members coming in, whether that was the medical systems or with the city and the county. And yesterday was just a beautiful picture of that. So thank you to everyone involved.
When people are unhoused right now in Sacramento, mm-hmm. and I know having spent time in Sacramento, the unhoused population and the number of encampments and the number of people that are camped on sidewalks and just trying to find spaces that are safe for them to be at is profound. There's a large population. We see people who are unhoused here in San Luis Obispo County, but certainly not as broadly as you see it in bigger cities. When someone would be diagnosed with an illness, a terminal illness, prior to this, what typically would happen to them if they weren't able to be placed in, say, a long-term care facility or didn't want to go to a hospital?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but the reality is they do die on the streets when there's not a place like Joshua's house, or if they're not able to get placement in a facility, which is the unfortunate reality, is people do end up dying on the streets with a terminal illness when there's no safety nets like this set up.
What makes Joshua's house different from a typical residential hospice?
Yeah, I believe one of the key differences is that we really approach this care for this population from a trauma-informed lens. We really want to know the population and how can we care specifically for those who are unhoused and may have certain traumas. We know that the care is going to look different. And so that's the model of care that we approach this work with, is just really understanding the trauma behind people and making sure that we can provide dignity in the care that we give our patients at Joshua's House.
Is Joshua's House now your Yolo Cares is providing the care at Joshua's House. Is Joshua's House now considered their residence?
Yes, so it is considered a residence. And it won't just be Yolo Cares providing the hospice care.
Okay.
Because we can't force a patient to choose their hospice. The patient always has the right to choose their hospice. There may be other hospice providers coming through our doors. Again, there's really that spirit of collaboration. So we might have Sutter Hospice coming through our doors. We might have Kaiser Hospice coming through our doors. But Joshua's House is the residence in which the hospice care will be provided.
And with the hospice care that's being provided, talk about the kind of care that the residence is providing. What kind of services do you provide?
Yeah, great question. With hospice care, they do receive nursing visit from a registered nurse case manager that really help to monitor the patient's pain and symptoms. They work closely with a medical director. They're also able to utilize services from a social worker who can help refer resources to the patient, walk them through things like an advanced care directive. We also have a team of wonderful volunteers who can be there and sit bedside with the patient. An incredible team of end-of-life doulas, which Deborah will talk about. And of course, if the patient wants access to a spiritual care counselor as well. So there's really a team behind the patient that's looking at them, not just from a medical perspective, but really, who are you as a person? How can we provide care for every aspect of you? Which I think is an incredible part of Joshua's House, being able to give that level of care to the unhoused population.
There was quite a bit of research done about this house and whether or not people will use it. Can you talk a little bit about that? How do you know that people are actually going to come in and utilize this facility?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. We've been meeting with the different hospital systems, and just from their feedback, we know that there is a need and that they do want to find placement for patients, and that people don't want to die on the streets alone. So we've been getting that feedback from our referral sources at the hospital systems.
For the services that you're providing, what is the requirement in order for someone to qualify to come into Joshua's House? Do you have some rules, some parameters about who can come in? Are you taking both men and women?
Yeah, great question, Chris. Yes, we are taking both men and women. The two criteria that you have to have in order to receive hospice care in Joshua's House is, one, you do have to be terminally ill, so you do have to have that referral. And then we also require that you are unhoused. So those are the two main points. There are the nitty-gritty details of the referral process that we have provided to the referral sources, but those are the two main points.
When you're talking about unhoused people, these are people that don't have permanent housing, is that correct? Or these are people that are living on the streets?
That is correct.
Okay. So if someone is living in their car, that's considered unhoused. If someone is couch surfing and going from house to house to house but doesn't have a permanent residence, is that considered homeless or unhoused?
Yes, Chris, that's exactly right. That is correct.
Okay. And in Sacramento, when you look at people who are unhoused, are you anticipating, do you have a sense of the ages of people that you're anticipating are going to be part of your resident population?
You know, I can't say for sure, but we do believe that there will be maybe a lot of folks who are age 30 and above, we think, that might be coming through our doors with these terminal diagnoses.
Deborah, talk a little bit about how aging is different for folks who are living unhoused than or illness. Having some kind of a chronic illness is different for people who are unhoused than it would be for someone who is housed.
Well, for your listeners, I think I would just like to point out, and one of the reasons I'm involved with this project, is the awareness around that when someone's unhoused and even with a chronic or terminal diagnosis, the access to medicine, follow-up care, support, nutrition, all of that becomes complicated by the simple fact that they are unhoused. And maybe that can look like medicines getting stolen, much needed medicines to help them through their pain symptoms, maybe some psych meds. We know that our unhoused population have that struggle when they have a diagnosis that they're trying to treat, even if they are still out on the streets. Beyond that, aging and being unhoused, the complications of, you know, access to even getting appointments care. In this society, we have a lot of dependency on our cell phones here. And what we know from the unhoused, and I can speak through the people that I know that are currently unhoused, is they cycle through phones every 2 to 3 weeks. So if someone who is not unhoused or hasn't experienced unhoused, if they can just step into those shoes for a moment and understand how complicated it is to get a doctor's appointment with a phone and to get a call back and get the care you need, that line of communication is a challenge as well. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Chris?
No, I think, too, that everything that continues to get complicated or complex with a chronic illness gets exacerbated when you're living in the elements, when you don't have clean water, when you don't have a supply of food, when you don't have a healthy diet. Those things mm-hmm. just absolutely have an impact on any kind of health elements. And chronic illnesses get worse very quickly.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. I'm Chris Kington Barker. The voices with me are Dee Rossi. Say it again, Dee.
Rossilau.
Okay, now I've got it. Rossilau, Program Manager at Joshua's House and YOLO Cares Program. Deborah Chapman, Joshua House Volunteer Doula Coordinator and Grief Specialist Support Groups Coordinator at YOLO Cares. Their website, if you want to look for Joshua's House and what they're doing, is joshuashousehospice.org. If you'd like to ask some questions or if you'd like to talk about this topic with us, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us at 805-781-3875. I'm really curious when you talk about people who are coming into the house. We mentioned things like medication, psychiatric medication. We mentioned substances, people who use substances on the street. What are some rules around that? Will there be some assistance and support for mental health issues for people that are coming into the house? And what if someone is using street drugs? Are they going to be treated for street drugs? Will that be assessed when they come in? And obviously they can't continue to use the street drugs in the house. Is that correct?
That's a great question, Chris. And, you know, one thing that I do want to point out, since Joshua's House is so new, there are all of these questions that we have to walk through. But one thing that we will have set up is these assessments at the hospital. So our team working with the hospital team and just really knowing the patient and knowing where they're at, their status, what are the different medications or drugs that they're using. Because one thing that we want to also create at Joshua's House is a safe environment, not only for our staff, but for the other patients. And so just really wanting to navigate this type of care with safety in mind first. And so there will be, I guess you can call a guardrail set up at that initial assessment at the hospital, and just making sure it's something that we can safely handle as a care team. So that is a great question and something that we are navigating and actively thinking about before Joshua's buses have been running.
And this is all voluntary. These residents will not be assigned to Joshua's house. This isn't a court commitment, nothing like that. These are people that are going to voluntarily decide that they want to come to Joshua's house. And if it doesn't work for them, they'll go from Joshua's house, right?
Chris, I'm going to take this. This is Deborah.
Yeah.
That is correct. They can voluntarily come into Joshua's house and voluntarily leave Joshua's house. But since the unhoused population is so large here in Sacramento area, what we are expecting to see with some of our first residents is catching the crest of that wave. Mm-hmm. So many of the residents that will be coming in will be near their imminent and active dying phase.
Yeah.
So some of these concerns about access to potential street drugs or usage is really going to be null and void, mm-hmm. because we're catching them at the very end of their lives.
Yeah.
What we hope is down the road a little further, after we've been able to care for some people at that crest of that wave, is that we could see some of these longer stays. Maybe even, hopefully, see some people get better. Who knows?
Yeah, and you bring up another point. When there was a lot of planning for Joshua's house, there was some pushback from the community about developing Joshua's house and where it was placed, and people who didn't understand what this facility would be. This is a facility for people who are dying. This is not a facility that is a homeless shelter, correct?
Correct.
And differentiating between the two, when you mentioned who the initial onslaught of people will be, these are people who, when you say eminent, these are people who were very close to actively dying. These are folks who may be confined so that they aren't very ambulatory anymore. These are folks that literally cannot take care of themselves very well.
Yeah, that's true, Chris. That's what we're expecting. And as Dee pointed out, we're going to learn once we open the doors.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the population that are going to accept this kind of care? Through some of our research and throughout the years, we know some people, they've expressed, the unhoused population that we've actually talked to have expressed that they don't want to die alone. But there's also challenges for people that have been unhoused for decades, right, and years, that they also will not want to be confined. So not everyone will choose to come to Joshua's house in their last days.
Right. And people do have a choice.
Absolutely.
What do you?
I think you wanted to speak a little bit more about the controversy.
Yeah.
Did I get that right? Yeah. So the controversy, you know, we can speak to the most present location, because there was a little controversy at the initial location as well. But yeah, it's across the street from an elementary school. It is in a predominantly Latinx community. When they caught wind of the development, there was a lot of pushback. All those misconceptions that one might have in trying to protect their community and their families from potentially seeing drug use on the streets, seeing dead bodies rolled out of the buildings while their kids are in the playground, and generally just not having a good conversation from the onset of having chosen the location where we're at. And, you know, that's a challenge there and a learning for anyone interested in starting something similar as Joshua's house, is to really build those communication bridges with community liaisons. You may have a heart of gold, and that is what Joshua's house is for many of us who are involved with this. And we learned communicating with the communities that are impacted, communicating with the communities that will be impacted by an endeavor such as Joshua's house,
is important.
Well, there's a lot of education, is what I'm hearing. There was a lot of education that was left out of the initial conversations. The community that Joshua's House is in, as I understand it, was a community that didn't understand the concept of hospice.
Yes.
And trying to differentiate homeless from hospice. There was a disconnect, and so all people were hearing about was that these were homeless people that were going to be coming into the community, and they were going to be free rambling, and it was going to be the things that they were seeing on other streets, except it was going to be right in front of the school.
Absolutely, and yeah. How heartbreaking to think that this endeavor was presented in that way to people.
Mm-hmm.
Without that education piece, you know, it can be scary.
Yeah, yeah. And is the community more accepting now, or is it a wait and see?
I'm just going to go off of our beautiful ribbon cutting that took place yesterday, and I saw no protesters when we had the original ribbon cutting a couple years ago at a different parcel very nearby. There were protesters. So there has been a lot of work done since GLO Cares has been chosen to assume management and ownership of Joshua's House to reweave those connections with community members and educate them. And, we're here for all community, you know.
This is a model that is the only one on the West Coast. There are some in the... On the East Coast, there is in the Midwest, there is a model of this kind of a concept. What have you learned from that that you need to ensure that is done in order to make this work?
Ask questions. Hi, Chris. This is Dee. What I've learned in the thick of it, because I'm on the... I guess you could say the administrative side with the policies and the procedures and trying to make sure things are set up for staff. One really big thing is just reaching out to those resources, right? We were really fortunate to be able to work with the In-Between, who I believe is in Utah doing similar work,
mm-hmm.
And just getting some feedback from them from what worked, working with our local shelters here in Davis, Paul's Place. Meeting with them and asking them what they see, what procedures work for them. Just really utilizing the community. Again, this isn't a one person or one organization thing. This really was an act of community, even with just getting the policies in place and getting, ideas around staffing. That was all asking questions from other people and other organizations and seeing what worked for them and incorporating it into Yolo Cares and what we hope to do.
We're going to take a break for just a few minutes and turn it over to Brad, and we'll be back to talk more about Joshua's House in just a moment.
Thank you, Chris. Just a reminder that it's our 50th anniversary here at KCBX this year, and we are inviting you to save the date for a big celebration. Join us for a day-long party on Saturday, July 26th. It's happening at the Octagon Barn in SLO. There's going to be live music and food and drinks, meet and greets, and lots more. So mark your calendar for July 26th as KCBX turns 50.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, our series is about the movement that helped millions of women across the world to have safe abortions outside of a clinic, and how all of this started in Brazil.
It was spreading by word of mouth.
Women stopped dying.
That's next time on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, we revisit painter, sculptor, and filmmaker Titus Kaphar's directorial debut, a film loosely based on his life titled Exhibiting Forgiveness. It's about a celebrated painter whose world unravels when his estranged father, a recovering addict, suddenly reappears in his life. Join us.
Federal workers in and around Washington have been fired by the hundreds of thousands, which means the businesses they rely on are going to suffer.
We are struggling with what the planning for the future looks like because it's hard to predict what our enrollment will be.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Childcare is a business, you know. That's next time on Marketplace.
What happened after enslaved people were granted their freedom and not much else? Today, a former plantation in Alabama houses a new exhibit on that history.
We invite you to step into the shoes of these people who are living on the precipice of a change in history.
Hear that story and the latest on Iran on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's a look ahead today on KCBX. Latino USA coming up following this program at 2. Then it's Fresh Air at 3, Marketplace at 4, and then All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30. Right now, let's return to Chris Kington Barker and her guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. My guest today, Dee Rosalau, Program Manager at Joshua's House, the YOLO Cares Program, Deborah Chapman, Volunteer Coordinator for Doulas, Grief Specialist and Support Program Coordinator for YOLO Cares, are with me today, and we're talking about Joshua's House. It's the first West Coast residential hospice that is designed and specifically set up to address the needs of terminally ill people who are unhoused. And welcome back, Dee and Deborah. So we're are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, great. I'm going to turn you up a little bit. With the services that you've got coming in, how many houses? This is a property, and there are individual houses. There are how many of them?
There are 6 houses.
Okay.
All together.
Okay, that's better. Thank you for getting closer to the microphone, and you have how many people that are going to be per house?
There will be 3 residents per house. We hope to have up to 15 patients in the whole facility.
Okay. And each of the residents has their own room. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And then how do you anticipate that you're going to be providing food? And, you know, are these through kitchens in the house? Is there a collaboration with other organizations to provide dietary? How are you going to do this?
Yeah, so we have a contract set up with our local Meals on Wheels, and they will be providing the food for our residents at Joshua's House. Each home also is equipped with a kitchenette, and so our residents will be receiving meals from Meals on Wheels.
Okay. And then talk a little bit about the staffing, because this is considered a volunteer hospice, correct?
It is considered a resident. We will have 24-hour caregiving on site.
Okay. All right. And just to point out, because it's hospice care, the hospice care is delivered just like it's delivered to people who have at-home hospice. You don't have a hospice nurse that stays there 24/7. The hospice nurse visits. And so the hospice staff visit the residents but don't stay there. They're not permanently there.
Right.
Okay. So what other services are you going to be providing?
We will also have our wonderful end-of-life doulas.
And what kind
of Deborah can talk a little bit about.
Okay. Deborah, what kind of care are the doulas going to be providing? And is this paid or is this volunteer?
So, Chris, alongside the doula volunteers, there'll be other volunteers that are not trained to be doulas. There's a big heart in this community, and people want to show up and serve this program and the residents of Joshua's House in whatever capacities are in their skill level. Doulas are highly trained individuals that have gone through trauma-informed care training and doula training through ANELDA, pro bono through ANELDA, which we're so grateful for, that they've stayed with this project for the many years and have trained many cycles of doulas. Doulas are basically end-of-life companions. For those that might be familiar with birth doulas, think of the birth doula, but on the other end of the life cycle. And for those residents that are interested in exploring life review, end-of-life planning, a death plan, what that can look like for your listeners that may never even thought of that, is to kind of conceptualize set and setting. What do they want there in their final moments of life? What does it look like, smell like, sound like? And really just a presence. You know, our doulas are going to show up in really nice sections of time. We're anticipating four-hour shifts. That doesn't mean someone's going to be sitting in a room for 4 hours, just staring at someone or trying to hold conversation. They're really going to be a presence. So if someone is of need and wants a companion, they'll be available to them.
A number of people who are unhoused may have lost touch with family or with friends, or may have their friends and family now, people that they've met while unhoused. Will there be someone that will be working to try and re-engage them with family and friends if that's something that they're looking to do? And who will that role go to?
Absolutely. One of the benefits of anyone working with a doula, unhoused or not, is that doulas have the gift of time. Whereas the hospice providers, you know, they have a limited amount of time. And this work typically would fall on a social worker. Mm-hmm. But what a doula does is complement the roles within a hospice care team. And they can often be there for, as I said, those four-hour shifts and learn deeper about a person's wants or needs, expressed needs or wants. So the doula will be hopefully gleaning that information if it's pertinent or relevant to a situation, informing the social worker, checking in with the social worker, and working deeply with that hospice care team to try to locate their family members or get letters to people that they want to. The doula will definitely be a fallback from the social worker. That's kind of the YOLO Cares philosophy over here. We have our roles, but we actually work as a team, and whoever has the bandwidth and can get it done for the wishes of a person who is nearing end of life, that's what we try to do.
And you mentioned spiritual counseling as well, so that will be incorporated into what's available to people in the house as well, if they choose that.
Absolutely. We're really, you know, this project's been going on for years, so there have been many connections that just need to be re-engaged. But within the hospice model of care, whether that's YOLO Cares or one of our partners, everyone has access to a spiritual care counselor. Beyond that, maybe the doula will be able to reach out to a particular pastor or priest that someone once walked through the doors of a church or a temple to speak to. So, those connections will be really important.
Okay. If you're just joining us and you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us at 805-781-3875. We're talking about Joshua's House. It's a new concept here on the West Coast of a development of a residential hospice specifically for individuals who are unhoused and terminally ill toward the very end of their life. We would love to hear from you. When you're adding services to this, have you had any challenges finding volunteers, or is this something that people in the community have really kind of rallied around?
Well, Chris, I think the greatest challenge has been to keep the doulas engaged throughout my own 6-year participation and interest in this project. Yeah. I've seen a lot come and go. Right now we have a really strong, highly trained, wonderful group of doulas. I believe the number is around 12, and there's many more that are interested. Now my little optimistic heart believes that once the doors are open, we're going to see some of those older interested volunteer folks come back into the fold who have been waiting for years for Joshua's House to open. YOLO Cares itself has a very strong volunteer department, referred to as citizens who care.
something that folded into the Yellow Cares umbrella of services just a few years ago and was its own organization at one point here in Davis. Every day we're getting calls of people that want to be folded into serving at Joshua's House. And I know we just spoke about spiritual care. One of them just yesterday is an old pastor that would like to come volunteer at Joshua's House. So I don't see any challenges in getting the volunteers that I would hope would be there for all the residents while they're at Joshua's House.
One of the questions that comes up is, why is this service not typically available in, for instance, a shelter situation?
That's a really great question. I'm not sure I have an exact answer to that, but I think part of it is also education. I think a lot of people don't know what hospice is, so they don't know that this is something that can be available to them. And so there's a lot of that misconception there. But again, people, Deborah touched on it as well, those who are at shelters might not have access to the hospital, might not have access to a doctor to get that type of referral. And so I think the part of this work also, which is why I'm excited that we have ECM that's coming up and the CALEM initiative, is just identifying these patients also who are unhoused and have some type of terminally ill diagnosis. I think for me that's the thoughts that come into my mind when I'm thinking about, you know, why this hasn't been done in shelters before.
Well, they don't also have the staff to do it in order to
Correct.
Have somebody who is this sick in a shelter. They would need to have staff that could allow them to stay there full time and attend to them. And they just don't.
The level of care is very different, right? When you're thinking about, an individual who's unhoused, versus an individual who's unhoused and really, really sick and terminally ill. So I think that's a really great point, Chris, also. It just requires a different level of care, a different setting for the patient as well. I guess that is why we're really excited about Joshua's House, is it is that for patients and people.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, when we're talking about homelessness, one of the things that I was doing when I was preparing for today's show is just doing some background on who is homeless. And there's been more facts that have come out about more recent studies and who's homeless in the U.S. And the idea, the concept of who is unhoused really is starting to spray away from what that concept is that we talked about in the beginning, which is that it is largely people who are mentally challenged or people who are you know, having mental health issues, people who are drug affected or alcohol affected, who want to be on the streets, who, you know, don't want to get their lives together. That's just really a misnomer. And when we talk about the numbers of homelessness that they come up with every year, that is the point in time count or the PIT count, it's largely considered erroneous because the people that are being counted for that are people that are in encampments, people that actually go out and they're counted in encampments. That doesn't include people who are living in their cars. It doesn't include people that are couch surfing. It doesn't include people that aren't in those encampments or aren't visible. And there's really a broad sense of more and more people. The other thing that's really devastating, I think, nationally, is that the highest percentage of increase in homelessness is people over the age of 65. And so when we talk about people who have chronic illnesses, when we talk about people who are vulnerable to the elements, when we talk about people who are more fragile in an environment where they're not eating healthy and where they're not having access to medication and medical care, we're talking about people who are older. And so I would think that, you know, we're going to see a need for shelters like Joshua's House. And there just isn't any real alternatives for people. If they, you know, if they land in an emergency room, maybe. But, you know, in emergency rooms, we see people that get turned out. If they're okay to walk and they can't be admitted because they don't have insurance and there's no reason to keep them, they're gone. And yeah. Where do they go? So, yeah. You know, that's kind of your agreement with the hospitals, isn't it? That you're the place that they could go as an alternative?
That is correct, Chris. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great point that you brought up as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that is most intriguing about this is the fact that it's trying something different. And it sounds like what you are doing is you don't know exactly what it's going to look like because you're going to tailor it around the people that you have coming in. Does that make sense? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, Chris, absolutely. Which is the exciting part, I think, with all of the services involved with Joshua's House is being able to really listen to what our patients need, what the populations need, and being able to tailor care and programs around what we are being told, the feedback that we're getting. I think that's what I'm really, really excited about is that partnership and that collaboration based off of the people that we're serving. And so that we're not just making policies and procedures based off of what we think, but based off of what we're hearing from the patients, based off of what we see when we're interacting with them every day. That's really an exciting piece for me. And I think with everyone else here at Yolo Cares is involved with Joshua's House.
If you just recently joined us for today's show, want to enjoy the entire broadcast, it'll be available on our website at kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show along with many others to choose from. Dee Rasolo, Program Manager at Joshua's House and Yolo Cares Program, Deborah Chapman, Joshua House Volunteer Doula Coordinator and Grief Specialist is here with me. We were talking about Yolo Cares. If you want to call in, we still have time for another call or so. You can reach us at 805-781-3875. I have a question for you, ladies. Something that I see a lot and I read a lot about is the bond often that happens with a lot of us and our animals, our pets. And I notice how frequently I'm seeing that people who are on the streets have animals with them. What is the rule about animals being in Joshua's House, and how are you contending with that if that is their only person?
Yeah, Chris, that's a great question. And that is something that we have been thinking about also as well. I know that Marlene has set up some relationships with local animal shelters or just organizations that will help with rehoming the patient's pets. Joshua's House, we've just seen the houses yesterday. The module homes are very small to start with. We're hoping that, you know, there can be expansion around that. But as of right now, we are leaning on those relationships, but we want to create rituals around maybe, you know, a ceremony for saying goodbye or setting up times when the dog can come, or the cat or whatever the animal is, can come and visit the patients, because we know that those relationships are very important for this population. So we're still figuring out the exacts and what that looks like. But one thing that I do know is that we will be listening to what, you know, our patients' needs are, and trying to come up with something that is safe and doable for the team to be able to provide once we're there and functioning at Joshua's House.
And for folks that have their things with them, you know, if someone is unhoused, the items that they carry with them are their, that's their life. So what do you do with those items? I mean, I think of people that I see that have got, you know, their stuff. If they, and I've had people who have said that, you know, that one of the things that they're carrying with them is the urn of their husband's ashes. So what about those kinds of things? Is there accommodation if they've got their own room for what they can bring in? Has that been thought through? How do you handle that?
Yeah. Well, we just toured the home, the module home. So there is in each room a closet that is set up dedicated to each patient. Again, space is also something that we'll have to work through together. Because that, you're exactly right. The possessions that people come into Joshua's house with is oftentimes the only things that they have with them in this life. And so it is something that we're sensitive to. We're also working with a limited amount of space as well.
Right. So is that something that you'll see when you see? I mean, there's no hard, fast rule if you can only bring two things with you. Is it on
right.
a case by case?
Yeah, we'll assess it case by case.
How have other facilities, like you mentioned, what is the one that's on the Midwest? Inside, what is it?
The In-Between.
In-Between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what have they done about that?
From what I have been reading from the previous policies that have been set up, I believe when patients come to their facility, there's a limit to what they can bring in. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, as far as cash as well, there's only a certain amount of cash that they can bring into the shelter. But patients also at Joshua's house will have dedicated lock boxes for any items that they deem valuable, and they'll have a code and a lock. That's what I've read from other facilities, is that there is some sort of limitation set up because they can't bring everything into the facility because of space.
Yeah. What is it now that Joshua's house is still needing? Have you been able to fund everything that is needed for Joshua's house? A lot of what's taken the 10 years has been the funding for it, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the ribbon cutting was yesterday. So the good news is the homes are up and they're built and we were able to tour them. Yolo Cares has not assumed ownership as of yet for Joshua's house. So the fine details of that I don't have. I don't believe we have until we get ownership, but the houses are there and they're built. And so we're just in the process now of getting them furnished and I believe getting, landscaping in.
And if I can just speak to and give a shout out to the Yochadihi tribe who just gave us a grant that will partially fund operations of Joshua's house in its first 6 months. And another portion of that was to go towards a native plant garden and also help us acquire some of those bigger purchases that we need to get in, much, I assume, like the hospital beds. And I heard Dee talking about television screens yesterday and, you know, little things like that.
Is it built on the land of the tribe? Or the tribe is just very supportive?
They're very supportive partners of
Yolo
Cares that also believes in this program and serving the populations. I don't have the demographics, but we do know that our BIPOC communities are more greatly affected by being unhoused.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be part of why they chose to fund Joshua's house and help see this through. And again, speaks to the greater community, right? It wasn't just one person. It wasn't just one organization. And even organizations expanding across the nation who have helped us craft our initial inception of what the Joshua's House policies, procedures, what works and what doesn't work. It's really been a huge lift
all across this continent.
Yeah, and this was really an effort with both private partnerships and health agency partnerships for public and private dollars that kind of launched this. Because this effort took, what, about $3.5 million?
I believe that's the correct number, right around there, just to get us to this point.
Right.
Right, finishing edges at that point, and there's still much more to go.
Right.
So Yellow Cares is a nonprofit hospice who will be assuming ownership and management of Joshua's House, and any interested donors can reach Yellow Cares and contribute specifically to Joshua's House funding. That's available. And, yeah, we'll continue to lean on the community to craft a beautiful, safe, and sacred space for our unhoused population to die. I just want to share, like, we're all of us that have kind of been in the weave of the tapestry of Joshua's House really see where we are today as taking this as a blueprint that can be expanded not just here in Sacramento with other parcels, but hopefully across the nation to support the unhoused and the life and the design concept and build that we are at now.
Well, that's fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on today and being willing to share your information about Joshua's House. And I wish you the very best. Your opening date for taking residence is when?
We have July 23rd as first patient date. And that all depends on, you know, when we can get all the houses fitted. But I'm putting it out in the universe and hopefully it sticks. But July 23rd.
Well, I want to thank my guests today, Dee Rosalow, and program manager at Joshua's House, and Deborah Chapman, Joshua House volunteer, doula coordinator. The website is joshuahouse.org. Is it joshuahouse.org? Yes. And
they can also visit Yolo Cares.
And yolocares.org. And next week, please join host Lotta Morty when she and her guests discuss making a difference in the lives of Indigenous youth. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for being a KCBX listener and joining us today on Central Coast Voices.